You know football, and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single-game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code CHARLIE, ZULU, ALPHA, BRAVO, ECHO to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.
It's your job. I give you money.
You never say thank you.
That's what the money is for.
That's crazy. It would have been on a talk radio show like Sports Chat or Sportzilla and the Jabberjaw.
Tuesday, October 14, 2025. Thank you for downloading. You and me today, and I have so much stuff to talk about because, well, stuff keeps happening. It's almost a problem now, me trying to triage, as I like to say, the most important stories, the best sound, the concepts, the ideas, the takes that I have about stuff. Which ones deserve the most airtime? So with that, let me get cracking, and this will be as close to a logical order as I can get, but I may jump around just a bit, so please be patient with me. Let's start with, why do coaches like James Franklin lose their team? I believe that James Franklin does not know how to win the big game intrinsically. With managing it, with everything else, there's something missing there. He's not the first one, however, that was not able to win the big game. And eventually you run out of chances to win the big game, and then they fire you. Tony Dungy in Indianapolis could not win the big game. But then he got another chance in Tampa with just the right people, and guess what happened? Oh, wait, no, that was the other way around. Couldn't win in Tampa. Did win an Indy because, well, he had Peyton Manning. Marty Schottenheimer, poor guy, for years just couldn't win the big game. Outstanding coach, Hall of Fame caliber coach, I don't think he's in. He would get there and get close, and there was something about the big game that put Marty just a little bit on edge. But a lot of it wasn't his fault. You know, he had Lynn Elliott missing four field goals in the game. You had Ernest Biner fumbling for the Browns. I mean, shit happens. So James Franklin, we know, could not win the big game. He almost won a really big game less than 3 weeks ago at home against Oregon. He was on the set of College Game Day that morning, and now he's gone. They were leading in overtime by a touchdown, and now he's gone. Bill Belichick has outlasted James Franklin this year in the coaching ranks. It's insane that he got fired, but then again, it's totally understandable and predictable given the current landscape. And I'm not saying that he didn't at this time deserve to be fired. I'm just trying to get my head around, well, he's not an idiot. None of these coaches are idiots. They are professionals who have families. And yes, they make a ton of money, but the last thing they want to do is sit at home and collect money for not coaching, even though Franklin now could if he wanted to, thanks to that massive buyout. These are competitive men who live to coach, to mold and shape young men, as the saying goes from my friend Chris Nockey. They're not happy like, oh, yay, I'm rich. What am I going to do, sit in my big, fat, rich house? Go play golf every day? Whoopity-do. So I don't believe for a second that Franklin was doing anything other than what had got him to this point and anything other than what had made him an insanely successful coach over a long period of time. I don't believe it. It can't be. I got to believe that James Franklin didn't approach the UCLA game with a, oh, well, we lost to Oregon, so the season's fucked. You guys do whatever you want, and just emptied a bag of footballs on the practice field. I don't believe it. I believe he was saying all the right things, doing all the right things, locking in and trying to urge his team, don't let last week's loss turn into this week's loss. And I would imagine the same thing with their loss to Northwestern. So why does it happen? I think one of the things that maybe is not talked about enough, but has to be true, is this generation of young people and young men is the most fragile, S-A-W-F-T, generation yet. They've been raised on their cell phones. And they, even the ones that play football, a very demanding game, a very tough game, they are the softest players we've ever had in my lifetime when it comes to high-level college football. The portal has, to a large degree, ruined the mindset of many of these kids, if not almost all of them. These kids quit faster and easier than ever. And these kids today think everything is supposed to be fun and exciting because that's the environment, the ecosystem that has come together when it comes to big-time college athletics. All of it is fun and exciting and tailgating and college game day and Pat McAfee up there doing his, oh, well, oh, well. And so when you lose in heartbreaking fashion at home, after college game day is there, biggest game of the year to date, it's not as fun anymore to then strap back in and get ready to beat a winless UCLA team that has fired their coach. They kind of go like, I'm bored. And it just has to be a little bit, and it just has to be across enough players on a team for this to happen, because I don't believe it's Franklin. It can't be Franklin. It's one thing if he had three big games against three big opponents and in the final minutes of each one of them, with the game right there to be won, he did something completely boneheaded, idiotic, and stupid. If that were the case, then I'd say, yeah, Franklin sucks. He's a moron. Can't win close games, big games. Get rid of him. But the transfer portal era has trained today's young men who play big-time D1 sports. It's trained them to see running away as a legit option and one that is not shunned. And even worse, they see it as something that could reward them with more money. Once they lost to Oregon, the season was not over. By no way, shape, or form, thanks to the expanded format and with how much parity there is this year, and there's no super teams. Season wasn't over, but suddenly it was a whole lot less fun. And so I believe these players today, and it's not just at Penn State, it's everywhere, they get caught in their feelings. And what causes bad ball? Getting all caught up in your feelings. But it's been a crazy college football year so far. By the way, the candidates to replace Franklin include Matt Rhule, who is a Penn Stater himself, Kenny Dillingham, Dilly Dilly, from Arizona State, and, of course, the big one, Kurt Cignetti. Now, Kurt Cignetti was asked about this, about leaving Indiana, last year. This right after he signed his extension, an 8-year extension, which we all know these things are not really, but, you know, they're made to prevent teams from trying to poach these coaches. Here was Coach Sig talking about the extension and is this really going to keep you there, or if you keep winning, will somebody come calling?
We awoke to some big news from Bloomington this morning. You signed a new 8-year deal. Congratulations on that. Curious, though, what were some of the important elements that you wanted included in that extension?
Well, you know, honestly, they came to me. They were very proactive. And, you know, some people say, well, you know, why would you do that when, you know, this one may open, that one may open, you know, and you're going to be a hot commodity and blah, blah, blah. And the fact of the matter is, we're the emerging superpower in college football. Why would I leave?
Everyone laughed. And yet people are now saying they're the best team in college football right now. because it's been that crazy of a year. Here's a tweet. Imagine somebody telling you in August that Indiana might be the best team in the country. Florida State would beat Bama by 2 touchdowns, then start 0-3 in the ACC. Imagine them telling you Mike Gundy would be fired 3 games into the season, that Bobby Petrino would be coaching the Hogs again, and that Texas, Penn State, and Clemson would all fall out of the polls at one point. College football, everybody. Emerging superpower. There is money coming into Indiana, the program. And you know who has money as well and is an Indiana alum and loves sports? Mark Cuban. Of course, the rankings are a disaster this year in college football. So get a load of this. Latest AP poll. Illinois is out of the AP top 25. Their only losses are to number 1 and number 3, and they're completely out. The Huskies of Washington have a legit gripe. They're 5-1. Their only loss was to the number 1 team in the country, Ohio State. And if they were in the SEC, writes Barstool Tate on Twitter, they'd be ranked in the top 10, yet they too are unranked. Now, Joel Klatt has said it's time to shut down the polls because they're completely out of line, out of whack, and of no use whatsoever. Other people have said, hey, it's just for discussion's sake. It's just for people that go, you know what? What are the top? You go click on the top 25 drop-down tab on the scores for the schedule coming up for the weekend to see, okay, who's actually going to be playing this weekend. It's a marketing tool as much as anything else. Back to Cignetti, though, for a second. I love these old photos that come out over the years of coaching staffs. There is a photo of Nick Saban at Alabama, 2010, with Kirby Smart, and Kurt Cignetti in one photo on the same sideline. Now, apparently, I've heard that Saban has been very cool towards Cignetti, has not really done much to sing his praises on that show. If anyone can back me up on that, let me know. But that's what I've heard. I've not watched every minute of every show. Now let's pivot to the pro game. I want to go back to last Thursday when Philadelphia ran the tush push 1, 2, 3, 4 times in a row to score a touchdown against the New York Giants. New York Giants! They ended up losing the game going away, so there's more problems than just that in Philly, but they were able to successfully go smash, 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 smash. And so therefore, many people have come out of the woodwork saying, okay, see, hey, a lot of Packer accounts on Twitter saying, look, our guy, Mark Murphy, on his way out the door, tried to get this thing banned, and you mocked us. Some of you, not everyone, but some of you mocked us saying, oh, well, you just can't stop it. You know, that's your problem. It is completely unofficiatable. It is ugly. And most importantly, the rules can be anything you want them to be. And once upon a time, there was a rule against helping the runner. Now, I'm not all for going back to the days where any push of any ball carrier was deemed a penalty. It's a simple fix to fix this. You say the person who receives the snap, the first person to touch the ball after the snap on offense, cannot be pushed. If you want to hand it off and then go ahead and try to do a tush push, fine. That's a fair fight. And it looks like a football play. It doesn't look like rugby. This doesn't look like rugby, and it's not a football play. The Titans have fired Brian Callahan. He went 4-19 as coach of the Titans. This year, they are continuing to spiral even further downward. Poor Cam Ward is just getting besieged by defensive ends and blitzing linebackers. It's not the environment that a rookie quarterback should be thrust into. He's got the worst stats Cam Ward does through 6 games of any quarterback in the last 10 years. Has had a lot of drops as well, and his WR2, I believe, is a day 3 rookie. So all of that is not good. Now, what should have got Callahan fired was back in week one when he didn't challenge a catch because he thought that one knee did not equal 2 feet. Any coach who does not know that rule, you probably want to think about getting somebody else. So Mike McDaniel is next up, according to the odds makers, as likely to get fired. He was seen wearing joggers, walking off the field and going to the press conference. Aaron Glenn was wearing joggers as well that were pulled up halfway to his shins. And people were quick to say, you can't lead men looking like that. Those two coaches are 2-11 combined, and for a reason. Actually, 1-11 combined. There's got to be a reason. It's the pants. McDaniel is next up, according to the odds makers. Brian Daboll is next up after that, and then Jonathan Gannon. Daboll, who got reprimanded by the organization and by the league for bitching out the doctors on the sideline over Jackson Dart, saying, get him out of the tent, for God's sakes. I mean, like a lunatic. And, of course, the NFL is so concerned about player health and safety. A wink, a wink. They had to make a big deal, of that to say, hey, we can't have our coaches berating the doctors just to get players back in the game. We'll see who's the next one to go. But you know it's probably going to be a busy year for firing coaches in the NFL as it has been in college. Now, a rare thing. I'm sure you probably won't hear many people do this, but I'm going to give a defense of Aaron Glenn of the Jets. What? He sucks. Are you serious? Really? You think? Hear me out on this. So everyone's roasting him for letting the clock run out at the end of the first half in their game in London, in which they lost to the Denver Broncos, a good team, a team that's 4-2. They lose 13-11 in a game in which Justin Fields, who is so not a QB1, he's a QB2, maybe QB2.5. I don't know how you want to position him. I think the best sort of book on, you know, Justin Fields now, let me get this tweet up here. This would be the best, I think, beat on it. Ready? This is from Brandon Tierney, WFAN, Jets fan. He said, I was willing to roll the dice on Fields. He's young, he's athletic, he's got high character. But he looks absolutely awful. Locks in on one target, zero feel for going through progressions, and has absolutely zero ability to make anticipatory throws. Never on time. After a few weeks, give me Brady Cook. Woof. That said, they've got Tyrod Taylor as their backup. Not much better there. But let me go to this halftime situation, because I think everyone was going a bit crazy on, I can't believe you're just going to let the clock run out. As I watched that unfold, I said, okay, hold on a second here. I understand why he was perhaps hesitant. Let me go ahead and play this piece of audio. It's 3 minutes. Do you have 3 minutes on you? I know I do. I just got fired, so I've got plenty of time. You too have been asking for more Zabecast, longer Zabecast. I am working on that. As you can hear, my voice is still a little bit scratchy and might be under the weather from the U-Haul move, but I'm getting my legs under me as I'm back in the home studio here. This was the 3-minute rundown on NFL Network. Rich Eisen and Kurt Warner were losing their minds watching what was happening. Here we go. I'm just going to narrate over top.
Almost at the 40-yard line now. Do they pick up their sense of urgency and say, we're going to try to score points? Or is it kind of the same old thing? We're going to hand the football off and be happy to go into halftime down just 4.
It's 10-6, a minute left. They got one timeout for the Jets left.
Just their second first down.
First and 10 at the minus 38.
On a punt. Oh, they're going to run it.
Run up the middle, Breece Hall, 4 yards.
Aaron Glenn is screaming at everybody to get on the ball.
Clock is running. 51 seconds. 50.
Kurt Warner's
49.
Hair is on fire in this booth.
I'm not normally speechless, but I'm trying to figure this out.
Fields tries to avoid the rush and cannot.
So Fields gets sacked, of course, one of 9 sacks, because he's not good. Final timeout taken, 35 seconds left.
speechless, Kurt, right? You know what I mean? Like, the,
well, and again,
I want to hear it.
After the sack, you let the Broncos call their last timeout in that situation, and then you decide what you're going to do on third down.
That's a good point. So the sack made it third and eight. Sacks are usually drive killers, but they only had to get about 15 yards to have a shot at a long field goal at the end of the half. But at this point, Warner made a good point. He said, let the Broncos take theirs first, and you go limp. You go limp pretending, well, we're just going to let the first half run out. And maybe Denver calls one, then you've got a timeout in your pocket on third and eight, which would be very valuable.
Man, you still leave the Broncos here a timeout. You're in third and long situation. You don't pick this up. Obviously, you got to punt it back to the Broncos and leave them with that timeout as well.
Nick Bonito with a forced sack. Sean Payton with a fresh piece of gum, fresh stick of gum in there. Just before halftime, 37 seconds to go. It's third and eight now.
Thought on that last play, Justin Fields had a quick out to the left-hand side. If he just gets back and gets the football out, but it's kind of been the theme here in the first half, just holding the football.
See, that's part of it. The Jets probably had a pretty good strategy of plays, but if your quarterback doesn't see the release valve guy that's going to catch it for 5, 6, 7 yards easy and run out of bounds to stop the clock, if your quarterback doesn't see that, it fucks everything up strategy-wise. Again, I know I'm sounding like the court-appointed attorney for Aaron Glenn, but I just wanted to bring that up.
A little bit too long.
So third and eight. A wild final 2 minutes here. Very little happening, by the way. There's an over-the-middle throw for Fields. And it appears it is just shy of the first down.
Fields check down. For 7 yards, they've got fourth and one. There was 30 seconds to go. No timeouts are left. Okay, now I'm going to stop the clock right there. Stop the audio right there. We're at 15 seconds left. It is fourth down and one. The Jets have no timeouts. They are still on their side of the field. They're at their own 48-yard line. And there's 15 seconds. This is the sort of the twisted knot. This is the titty and the ringer that they got themselves in. And I don't think that letting the clock run out was the worst strategy in the world, and here's why. You've got to get the ball 15 yards. You got to get it, or let's call it 10. You're at your own 48. You want to get to the other team's 42 or 43. Spots at the 50, 60-yard field goal. You only have 15 seconds to do that, but let's say you run a play and it's incomplete. Now the Broncos have the ball and they're on your side of the field and they've got a timeout. You could run a play, not get it on fourth down, leave 10 seconds on the clock. The Broncos would have it on the plus side of the field with a timeout in their pocket, and then they could throw one pass over the middle of the field, call timeout right away. That's a 5, 6, 7 second play, if that, and then kick a field goal. The Jets were actually in a tight spot. Tight spot. Now, did it look good for Aaron Glenn to just stand there and to have the cameraman kind of zoom in on him like, well, coach, we're waiting. But strategically speaking, I thought at that point, however they got there, either because they had a shitty strategy or because Justin Fields fucked them by not hitting the guy wide open on the outlet pass to run out of bounds. Don't know. But I won't kill him for that. I won't kill him for that. I'm not saying he's a good coach. I am saying it's too damn early to know. There have been some wobbles. And by the way, this is the kind of strategic stuff that I have argued now for a long time. If teams were smart in the NFL, they would have a chief strategist that would have primary control of, here's what we're doing right now, coach. We're going to run, we're going to pass, we're going to save our timeout. We're going to call timeout, we're going to do this, we're going to punt, you have to give some of the strategic decisions to a strategist because the coach on the sideline, Aaron Glenn is terrible at this for a simple reason. He's never done it. He's never watched it be done from the couch like you have and I have. Why would he be good at this? You know what Aaron Glenn has been doing for the last 20 years? One, playing football in the NFL, and really damn well. And number two, coaching players and getting them motivated and working on techniques and scheming up defensive schemes and stuff. The tactical points of winning a game with timeouts and strategy and run versus pass and this and that. Many coaches screw that up. And I would trust a guy to go, he's our strategist. When the game gets tight, this is all he thinks about. And he tells the coach, timeout. And you don't question him. Boom, you call it. And if you want to pass, you say, we're passing here. And then tell the coach, pick whatever pass play you like, but we're not going to just run the ball here. Because from a clock standpoint, that will be bad. So if that wasn't enough of a defense of Aaron Glenn, and again, he may be a doofus, but I haven't heard anyone say, well, here's exactly what he's doing wrong. And here's the way he's not connecting with his team. We're six games in. He wasn't a terrible hire. I don't think a lot of people went to write and talk about, oh my God, what a bum this guy is. He was a fairly hot commodity. They also interviewed Vrabel, by the way, who might have just used the Jets interview as leverage to get more money or to get the Patriots job, but whatever. Aaron Glenn was not some schnook that everyone said, what a terrible hire by the Jets. It's the same old Jets. And by the way, you know what the Jets were expected to be this year? Bad. They are bad. Maybe not as bad as you think, hold that thought, but they're bad. They are trending to be exactly what people expected. They have a quarterback problem that they knew about. They took a chance. They took a flyer on Fields to think maybe we can make him QB1. Narrator, in fact, they could not make him QB1. He's just not good enough as a passer. He does lock on to receivers. He does lose his eye line when the pressure gets tight in the pocket. He doesn't step up as naturally as some other guys do. It's not the worst thing in the world. It's hard position. He's a decent backup. If you don't have to play him, well, yeah, that too. He's a decent backup if you don't have to play him. So Aaron Glenn is off to an 0-6 start. He may or may not get canned by the Jets. I would hope if you're Woody Allen. I would hope if you're Woody Johnson or Woody Allen. If you're Woody Johnson, I would hope that you would have enough sense to go, no, we're not firing a guy in his first year. We got to see the whole year play out. We believe in Aaron Glenn. We hired him, paid him a lot of money, gave him control over assembling a staff. What kind of way to run a team is this? Of course, Woody Johnson fired Saleh last year because the season was circling the drain, and maybe Aaron Rodgers wanted it. Either way, you can't fire him. Or you can, but you shouldn't. Because Dan Campbell was 4-17-1. 4-17-1 in his first 22 games. And the Lions kept their hand in the fire with him. And they didn't have to. But the Lions did something that is out of what had been their character, which was just, where are the instant results we're looking for? Next. Also, it needs to be pointed out, the Jets this year have lost 34-32 to Pittsburgh on opening weekend on a 60-yard Boswell field goal at the Meadowlands. They lost to Tampa Bay with Tyrod Taylor playing that game due to Fields' injury, 29-27 on a 36-yard Chase McLaughlin field goal. And they just lost 13-11 to Denver. That's 3 2-point losses right there. Those are coin flips, people. They're coin flips. That's a 4-1 team, a 5-1 team, a 4-2 team. They've lost to three teams that are a combined 13-4 by 2 points each. What if they were flipped? Would anyone be saying what an idiot Aaron Glenn is? They would know. Maybe be complaining about, why is he so loyal to Justin Fields? He just had negative 10 net passing yards. But they wouldn't be calling for his head. They wouldn't be calling him an idiot because we are so captured by actual results these days, by the record. The record means you're a mark. You're 0-6. Yeah? Well, I looked here at the schedule. They got Carolina, who's perhaps friskier than we think, Cincinnati, who basically stinks, and Cleveland, who basically stinks. Plus, they got Baltimore on the road, the Jets do. given how bad Baltimore is. Well, it'll be better once they get Lamar back, but still. And they've got New Orleans on the road. They got a chance to win some games here, is what I'm saying. If it was my team and I was the owner, I would literally come out every week and say, we are so not firing him. Why would we? I fully back him. Call me. You can call me at the end of year two. And that's the earliest we'll fire this guy unless he starts showing up to work drunk. Time for your stat of the day. Baker Mayfield is 5-1. The team that once had him, the Browns, 1-5. Daniel Jones is 5-1. The team that once had him, the Giants, are 2-4. Sam Darnold is 4-2. And the Jets, who once had him first before being flipped to Carolina and to San Francisco and through Minnesota, even though Church is trying to actively forget it, the Jets are 0-6. That is so great. The trio of castaway toys, Baker, Daniel Jones, and Sam Darnold, are having seasons, and I am happy for them. Let's get some other stuff in, smaller things, and maybe this will be an actual big thing, but when I heard it, I said, what? Tua Tagovailoa is pissed people are not showing up to the players-only meetings on time, saying it's part of a dysfunctional culture in the locker room. He said this at the podium with the Dolphins backdrop behind him with the Hard Rock Stadium logo.
Well, I think it starts with the leadership in helping articulate that for the guys and then what we're expecting out of the guys, right? We're expecting this. Are we getting that? Are we not getting that? We have guys showing up to player-only meetings late. Guys not showing up to player-only meetings. Like, there's a lot that goes into that. Do we have to make this mandatory? Do we not have to make this mandatory? So it's a lot of things of that nature that we got to get cleaned up, and it starts with the little things like that.
To be clear, you're saying some players were late or missed?
Late, yeah.
Yep. Thank you.
I mean, he said this after a 3-interception game. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I say it's pretty clear they don't respect him down in Miami, and I think old Coach Hippie Dip has also lost the plot in Miami. Jim Nantz had the call of the week easily on one of the great quarterback scrambles for a first down since Steve Young once had a bumbling run in San Francisco against the Vikings. I believe it was in the playoffs even. One of the iconic quarterback scrambles of all time. That one was longer. This one only 14 yards, but it was electric factory stuff.
Shepard out there, his old college teammate. But he's not going to have a chance. Oh, yes, he is. He fights through the sack. Looking for first down yard. Oh, my goodness, he's done it again. Oh, that is pure Baker.
Shepard. Unbelievable. The way he's pump faking. He's got the ball out behind him. He pulls it down. He starts to run. He pump fakes a throw. He jukes it over here. He slithers through a guy. He takes a guy on. I mean, this is great stuff. This is like a Fran Tarkington with size out there flat out bawling. And everyone's now pumping him up as the possible MVP. A lot of season to go, but that was one of the calls of the year. Great tweet. Eric Lister says, I just bought Titans versus Saints tickets for Christmas. I got a fraud alert for the purchase. Chase Bank asked if I was actually making this stupid purchase. That's a good one. Also needs to be noted, the Panthers are now 2-0 since the, what was the name of it, Kitty Litter podcast about the Panthers shut down because the two guys doing it were too utterly despondent about the direction of the team and the franchise. Oh, why can I not remember it? Meow Mix, Kitty Litter, Chow Chow, whatever the podcast is. But, well, since the podcast went down, Panthers are undefeated.
Decision of his coaching career so far here in Carolina. Fitzgerald for the win. It is good. The Panthers
Dallas upset the Cowboys for one of Dave Canales' biggest wins as the headband for the Panthers.
Panthers now 3-3. Rico Dowdle with another monster game, 180 yards rushing against a Dallas D that supposedly was going to be better against the run because they traded Micah Parsons for Kenny Clark. There were holes the size of Montana for Dowdle to run through. It was also the Rico Dowdle revenge game because, remember, he was a Cowboy. Old Rico Dowdle. Meow Mix. I'm pretty sure the podcast's name was Meow Mix. I can't remember it. Nobody. You know this meme where you go, nobody, and there's a colon, and there's just nothing? And then there's something random that nobody agreed upon after that? Nobody. Browns. Let's let Dylan Gabriel cook. Dylan Gabriel had 52 squeezes in their loss to the Steelers. I think it's their 23rd consecutive loss at Pittsburgh in division. Woof. That is very Brownsy of them. Gabriel not only had 52 passes, he also had only 4 passes over 10 yards in the air on 52 squeezes, even as the game fell out of reach at the end. Afterwards, reporters couldn't help but ask Myles Garrett, how does it feel? How frustrated are you about the losing and the way games are being lost? And he just mumbled some answer that I could barely hear and didn't really want to hear it. Because you know why? He demanded a trade out, and then they said, oh, hold on, here's a ton of money. And he said, you know what, maybe I'll stay a Brown. This is the same thing with Garrett Wilson of the Jets, who, by the way, suffered a hyperextended knee. He's going to be out a couple of weeks. Dan Orlovsky has been tweeting, they're wasting Myles Garrett? They're wasting Garrett Wilson in New York. Yeah, but he signed a second deal with him, didn't he? So nobody wants to hear it from players that sign with known bad teams, like, say, the Jets and the Browns, and then start boo-hooing when they're still not winning. Wake up, playa. Know what time it is. Know what the bad teams are. If you don't know where are the bad organizations that probably have no hope of ever being good in my lifetime, call somebody. Put it out on Twitter. They'll tell you. They'll say, yeah, no, bro. The Jets are always going to be bad. You know, one of the things I love most about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast. In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. If you are overwhelmed by the hiring process or you've been struggling to get your job post seen, listen up. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps right to the top of the page for relevant candidates, so you reach exactly who you want faster. And it makes a huge difference, according to Indeed data. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this podcast will get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the podcast by saying you heard about it right here on this pod. Indeed.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
You know football and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over a half $1 million to be won. Make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit mybookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. Then there's this, foot size doesn't matter, she said. Large feet, large hands, big shoes, big gloves, and what else? Big penis. So there is a there was an incident in which Eddie Pinheiro of the Niners, their kicker, had his foot stepped on by a teammate. Now, there was a zoom in on the player who stepped on his foot, but you couldn't see his number, so we're not sure who exactly it was. Pinheiro quickly did a, ow, 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 you stepped on my foot, but he still made all three of his field goals in the loss, a loss that included the loss of Fred Warner for the rest of the season, their outstanding linebacker with the magnificent, long, dreadlocked hair. Great player, handsome fella, dagger of an injury. Yet another injury for the Niners. Pinheiro gets his foot stepped on in this game, does the ow, 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 but still makes all three field goals. Forget all that. Look at the photo. Go see the photo of the size of this lineman's foot versus the size of Eddie Pinheiro's teensy, tiny little I kick field goal foot. This is my foot, I kick field goal. Go look at the size difference, and you will say that has to be a Photoshop. That cannot be real right there, but it is. Evan McPherson almost broke the NFL record for longest field goal. Not just outdoors at Lambeau Field. It would have been the longest field goal ever at 67 yards. Justin Tucker indoors at Detroit from a couple of years ago holds the record currently at 66. You kind of know somebody's going to break it this year. It was almost McPherson, Money Mac.
With the wind, and it is gusting to 20. And he's got the accuracy. Oh, it hit it. Timeout, Green Bay. Timeout, Green Bay, as he hit the crossbar.
And hit the crossbar and ricocheted in. And went in.
Oh, my goodness. How about that?
Money Mac's got a big leg. His actual attempt, where they actually rushed the kicker, because that the players had stood down, so it was a bit of an easy free run kick. You could drive it lower, ended up a couple yards short. Mark Sanchez is out of the hospital, but man, he is down bad. Here he was being greeted by a small camera crew as he walked out of the hospital and out of the courthouse, out of the Marion County Jail, where he got fingerprinted and his mugshot taken for his upcoming legal woes. Take a listen to Mark Sanchez.
Mark, is there anything you want to say to the people of Indianapolis?
I said no. Right now I'm just focused on my recovery. And I just wanted to thank the first responders. Eskenazi Hospital. That's how you're going to get to me. I just want to thank Dr. Mosler, the surgeon. She saved my life. So.
Wow. Now, I don't doubt that he's genuine in saying that, but still, that is the look and the sound of a man who realizes I fucked my life up. Security footage showed him wandering aimlessly alone downtown for like 20 minutes before the incident. That to me is as wild as everything as anything else. You would have thought he would have had somebody, a wingman, a small crew with him at all times. Like, hey, Mark, you're hammered. Come on. Hey, come on. Let's go. Let's go, butt fumble. Let's get you into bed, buddy. But one bad night and he is in big trouble. Could do jail time. Certainly out of a contract, even though Fox has not fired him yet. You know they will. And, yeah, thankful to be alive. This too shall pass. He still probably has a lot of money in the bank. He'll serve whatever time, and who knows, maybe he'll get to broadcast again. I doubt it. But, yeah, it's not good. He's a man who was
down bad. The account NFL Turkmenistan says, suddenly, I've noticed the ads on the red zone are not just for a total of 15 seconds. That's what they said when they started this nonsense. Gee, who could have seen that coming? Well, everyone. And as Darth Vader once warned us,
I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Pray I don't alter it any further. I also noticed, and maybe I'm late to the complaining party on this, but when they go to a four box, when Scott Hansen goes to a four box, it's a pinched in four box with sort of, what do they call those things on the side? The bars, the bookmark bars. I can't think right now. There's no need. A 16 by 9 high def television splits perfectly into four smaller boxes. Hence the term 4K. 4K is four HD or 1080p images in a single screen. Why are they doing the sidebars on that? And they've got the little graphic and the ticker and the scroll on the bottom. It's completely gummed up. I also noticed that even on the two screen, that two is shrunk down. I mean, this is outrageous. We pay actual money for this. You're telling me that we don't get everything the way we want it, the way we should, because we're paying for it?
I am altering the deal. Okay. Pray I don't alter it any further.
And then there's this. The Scoragami account has either been hacked or it has been sold. This tweet is from one Jake Marsh, play-by-play broadcaster, Pardon My Take, and Syracuse alum, who, oh, wow, he's got a lot of followers, Jake Marsh. How do I not know Jake Marsh? 258,000 followers. He's one of the Barstool guys. Here he is explaining what's going on with one of our favorite little things during football season, which is the old NFL Scoragami. For those that don't know, a Scoragami is a score in the NFL that has never happened before. An oddball score. Like, you know, 55-6 or so, or 55-2 maybe, or something like that. There's a whole grid of scores that have happened. And whenever we get a Scoragami, which happens 5 or 6 times a year on average, this Scoragami account on Twitter makes sure to send it out. Like, oh, and here in this game, it was a Scoragami. Never had that score before. It's silly. You don't want a prize. Although, honestly, some burger joint should team up with them and give a coupon for, like, free fries on the Monday after a Scoragami. But we got bigger problems right now in Scoragami land. I'll let Jake Marsh take it away.
My fellow Agamians, our once fearless leader, the Scoragami account, has gone off the rails. The kingdom of quirky scores is wobbling, and morale is fading fast. Earlier today, we were duped by a fake Scoragami alert in Cowboys-Panthers for a score that has happened 96 times. And just moments after the Bucks-49ers game went final, a fake report was published there too, and people were celebrating like a national holiday, while the record books just rolled their eyes. And that is not okay. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. But fool me 3 times, make a State of the Gami video. And that brings us
State
to
of
now.
The Gami.
To make matters worse, it spammed random scores in the middle of a random workday earlier this week. And the real heartbreak? 2 actual Scoragamis. Week 1, Sunday Night Football, Bills Ravens. Week 4, Sunday Night Football, Cowboys Packers. Both completely ignored. And that is completely unacceptable. We are now living in a world of misinformation, counterfeit celebrations, emotional instability. So to whoever can fix this, step away from your desk and please log in. The people aren't asking for much, just accuracy, accountability, and the occasional never-before-seen final score in NFL history. Restore dignity. Restore faith. Restore NFL Scoragami. Thank you for your time.
Huzzah, huzzah, Jake Marsh. It won't be any fun if it's spamming out non-scoregamis and if it's ignoring actual scoregamis. We need it to be on point. Now internet sleuths are starting to dig in and try to figure out, has this thing been sold or hacked or something? What's going on with that? Quickly to baseball, Dodgers-Brewers Game 1 NLCS tonight, moments from now. It is also the Padres' interim skipper showdown. Photos of both Dave Roberts wearing Padres gear as their interim skip, as well as Pat Murphy wearing Padres gear as he was once an interim skipper of the Padres. Didn't remember that? That's kind of funny. Dodgers have the number one payroll in baseball. It's topping $330 million or something like that. Their luxury tax is almost another $200 million on top of that. The Brewers are in at 23. Not the poorest team in the league, but certainly much more fiscally responsible. Quinn Priester and Andrew Vaughn have been two key guys this year for the Brewers. They traded for Priester from the Red Sox, and he was a, you know, he was a high prospect, but he had not really done much with the Red Sox. And the Brewers gave up a lot in return. And many in baseball said, I don't know, man. But they saw something in Priester that they think they could fix in their so-called pitching lab. And boy, did they fix it on Priester. Vaughn, meanwhile, their first baseman, is a better story because they got him from the White Sox when Aaron Civale, pitcher for the Brewers, was being told, hey, with guys coming back from injury and with bringing Jacob Mizorowski up from the minors, your spot in the starting rotation is no longer, you're going to the bullpen. Savali's like, fuck that, trade me. And they're like, bro, you're Aaron Civale. You're not like Nolan Ryan. What do you, real trade? You want out of this feel-good situation just because you're going to come out of the bullpen? Okay, dude. So they traded him to the White Sox for Andrew Vaughn, who was once a very high prospect and a promising slugger, but had been on the back of a milk carton for the longest time. And as soon as he gets to the Brewers, Andrew Vaughn just starts raking and had a big home run in their Game 5 clincher against the Cubs. Plus, they've got bonus babies like Caleb Durbin, who's too short to play third, but he's somehow doing it and doing it well. They had Miz come up and be a sensation, made the All-Star game, which probably was a mistake, fell off a bit since then, throws 104, which we know 104 in this league, if it's flat with bad location, gets crushed. But Miz gave him four really good innings to get him through Game 5. I love it, too. They asked afterwards, they go, so did they tell you how long they were going to go with you? Because it was a bullpen game. And one would have thought, you don't want to trust this rookie for more than an inning or two at most. And he went four. Afterwards, Mizorowski said, no, they didn't tell me shit. That's a good thing. Because you know what? Meat, you would have been thinking about it. And thinking hurts the ball club. Dodgers have their pitching rotation pretty well lined up. It's Blake Snell tonight. It'll go against another hodgepodge game for the Brewers. They start Aaron Ashby, who has not been good so far in the playoffs. Somebody also put this out on Twitter, a little photo, saying these two would have some fun calling these two are going to have some fun calling this series in heaven. And it is vintage Uke, vintage Scully, in a nice little Photoshop. Give credit to Dugout Report for making the Photoshop of this. Man, one would think you could use ChatGPT or Sora or Gronk 3 or Super Gronk to create at least a small snippet of what it would sound like if Vin Scully, legendary Dodgers announcer, and Bob Uecker, legendary Brewers announcer, were side by side calling the game. You could probably do that. I've seen the Mr. Rogers and Tupac video created by AI, and it's unbelievable that we can now do this with just a few little prompts. But yes, just the photo of thinking about Uke and Scully with this series coming together, it's good stuff. What's wrong with flying the L? Good question. Brewers celebrated after beating their rival, the Cubs, by taking a L flag. For those that don't know, the Cubs have a tradition where they fly a big white W on a, or no, big white W on a blue background or blue W on a white background. I think it's the, it's one of the two. Should know this. And the Brewers have taken to, and Brewer fans have taken to, ordering L flags. And when the Brewers play the Cubs and they beat the Cubs, they fly the L. They hang the L outside their front door. There is even a bourbon from Central Standard Distillery called Fly the L Bourbon in Milwaukee. It's great. It's a nice bourbon. It's a cute thing. Would you want it, though, in the team photo as a team after you beat your rivals? It all depends on really what you think of what's appropriate or not. My guy Armin Sarian got into it with a Cub fan. He wrote the following on Twitter. I love all the Cub fan accounts whining about the Brewers raising the L flag in celebration. It's funny that they think they're the only ones allowed to have a battle cry in celebration. We took your flag and raised it ourselves. To the victor goes the spoils. That prompted somebody saying, and yet you guys cheer for Ryan Braun now, who ruined Kenosha's own Dino Lorenzi's life as a sample collector for the drug testing company when Braun improperly and rather scummily accused Dino Lorenzi of mishandling his urine sample when, in fact, he was indeed using performance-enhancing drugs and got a massive suspension. Up here in Green Bay, writes Mr. Millard on Twitter, I've heard numerous parents ask, do I want my kids acting like that when they win by doing things like flying the L banner? The resounding answer from both fan bases is no. I hope you, Armin Sarian, have no impact on youth. To which my boy Armin says, you know, I've got some impact on youth, but it's not necessarily huge yet. I am pretty confident in my ability to be a good influence on youth, though. I appreciate you drawing so many conclusions about me just because I cheer for the Brewers. I, for the record, didn't love it that they brought the L flag out for this reason and this reason only. Why bring anything about the Cubs into your moment, into your frame, into your lifetime photographic memory? Everyone knows you beat them. You don't need the dumb little flag. That, to me, is a fan thing. I think you want to beat the Cubs just as a everyday, wake up, hating those sons of bitches from down south kind of way. That you don't need a simple little flag to go with it. That this was your moment. You guys did this. You won. You were the better team. You had it when the series was on the line. Don't bring anything about the Cubs, even a taunting flag, into the picture. That's just my opinion. Everyone can have their own. And don't say fans are not creative in baseball. Have you seen the guy who went viral for game one of the Mariners and Blue Jays standing behind home plate with a t-shirt that had a Cal butt plug on it? Yes, that's right. Now, you could say, well, the kids, youngins, wouldn't even understand what the shape of this thing is. That if you already know, looking at that, like, ooh, it looks like a little lava lamp. What is that? Of course, some kids are probably going to go, Papa, what is that thing he's... Well, you know, it's an adult toy for adult activities. What does that mean? Where do you put that? Why is it shaped that way? But man, the big dumper butt plug shirt goes hard, is all I can say. Let's end on this. It's been a week and a half. It did not get better today at my old station, 97.3 The Game. More on that in just a second. But I cannot thank everyone enough for all of the emails and the tweets and the messages that I've gotten from you listeners. Listeners going back with me to the days of one-on-one sports in Chicago in 1994 and through the years, nationally, in D.C., with Bob and Brian in Milwaukee, with this latest show in Milwaukee. So many heartfelt emails, lengthy emails, full of details. I have tried to start a quick response to every one of them, but I'll be honest, I don't think I'm going to respond to everyone. So if you did email me and you don't hear back, please don't go, "Oh, what a jerk. Sorry I even said anything nice about you." But thank you. All of them are tremendous. And I know you're saying, "Hey, man, you're great. You're going to find something great. Everything else, it is wonderful to hear." It got me to thinking because a couple guys that I consider some of my best friends, Nathan Nye and Scott Shirey, Nathan from Philly area, Scott down in Houston, are two very different personalities. But they are bound by the same thing as me, an absurd, irrational love of golf and of sports. And we've become really good friends, the three of us, along with me and some other listeners who have become what would be called now inner circle, actual friends of Zabe, usually by way of golf. And I know you're saying, "Well, I don't play golf. I'd like to be on the inner circle." It's not that I don't have any method to the madness on this. It's just that these are guys who ended up saying yes to golf trips, and that's why they're now my friends. I keep forgetting that Nathan and Scott have listened to me for years. So I just treat them and talk to them and text back and forth with them just like they're buddies, and I'm not even in I'm a broadcast personality mode. But then every now and then you go, "Oh, yeah, that's right." Now, Nate is more antique and historical in his passion for golf. Very good player, too, by the way. Low single-digit handicap. Powerful hitter. Powerful hitter for a fellow who's a bit diminutive. You know, not the tallest guy in the world. My boy Scott, though, loves golf more along the lines of challenge and improvement. He's got Arcos, the sensors that go in the butt end, the butt plug end of your golf clubs and link to your phone and will tell you the exact distances that you hit your shots and will give you data on how many, you know, do you miss fairways to the right or to the left? Doesn't yet do swing speed and stuff like that, but still it's a kind of a cute thing. I've had Arcos. I've returned it.
It's a shocker.
And it just didn't work out for me because it's got some bugs to it. But Scott says he's going to start a new thing called brute force golf. A whole media, social media thing about, I'm just going to force my way into being a better player. Because I've told him now for a while, I'm like, "Bro, if you don't let the game come to you, if you don't chill the fuck out, you're never going to reach your potential as a player. You're too high strung. You get too angry. Let the game come to you." So Nate and Scott are two very different guys. But I met these guys who are my now really good friends through radio and through this podcast. Scott first responded to me for a trip to Pinehurst. Nathan jumped on board my first Scotland trip when I said, "Hey, who out there would like to go?" Now, Scott's story, I think I've told before. He was in sports television in market 182, Jonesboro, Arkansas. Not making very much money. Any money. Okay. Any money. He was going out into the field as a solo shooter, solo reporter. And then finally, as he was losing his hair, he told me, a TV consultant came into the station and said, "Hey, sports guy, have you ever considered hair plugs?" And Scott was just like repulsed by the notion of it, thinking, "I am not getting some Frankenstein surgery just to have a little bit of hair so I can keep climbing the TV ladder up from market 182 in Jonesboro. F that. Life is too short for this bullshit. I'm out." He quit television, started working for a medical shelving company, assembled shelves for hospitals. He then got into being an actual medical sales rep, became one of the top valve reps on pharma sales. He got a totally raw deal at his last company over a $48 reimbursement for food at a grocery store on a road trip, all because he believes one manager just had it out for him. And I believe it because that's how corporate America is. Well, now I'm thankful to say he's with a new company and he loves it. He's just a resilient guy and a lunatic gentleman, which I love. Now, Nathan, to me, was always very polished and buttoned up because I didn't know Nathan's full backstory. Nathan, to me, is smooth as butter in business. He presents well, looks good, dresses nice. He'll write thank you notes. He's written thank you notes to me when he came and stayed at my house when we went to the Solheim Cup. And I'm like, bro, you don't have to write a thank you note. He said, nah, I like to do it. It's part of, it's practice for me. I like doing this. I do this. I send a gift basket. I send a thank you note. This is what I do. Classy Nathan. He told me this when he heard the news that my show had ended. He said, hey, Zabe, I've been out of town. All right, no, he said, I've been out in my own orbit the last 2 days with work and did not know that all this went down until I listened to your podcast on my drive home from New York City today. All I can say is corporate leadership these days is all run by spreadsheet nerds and they have no understanding of actual market dynamics. I feel for you having been on that short side of the equation myself. You are a survivor and I know you will adapt and overcome as you always have. I said, wow, thanks a lot, man. That means a lot, Nathan. I appreciate that. He then said, you know, I had a surreal moment today. I was having breakfast with the wife, and I was listening to you, Scott, and Solly on the Zabecast, and I said, you know, 15 years ago, we moved into this house, which had drained the bank account, by the way. And I said to her, I was broke at the time, sitting in that office, asking myself, what the hell have I just done while listening to these three guys, you, Scott, and Solly, crack me up talking morning sports and making me laugh? And now look at this. 15 years later, I'm texting with you and internationally traveling on golf trips with you. You've been an integral part of this journey on my end, and listening to the trio again this morning was just a great personal reminder of how many things we have and will continue to conquer. Just wanted to share with you the impact you have had on this one savage, quote unquote, from Philly. I said, wow, Nathan, what? You were bankrupt. You're out of money. What? I said, give me the backstory. And the backstory was, he said, I left DC in 2003, 2004 to work for my dad and to start a Philadelphia office for his business that was based in Pittsburgh. He couldn't pay me much, but bare minimum, and made my contract very commissions-driven. This is his dad, by the way. Needless to say, I went into major debt along the way. I had a chance to dig out of debt, but instead, I met a girl, and I bought her a ring. Married in 06. So I dig out of debt by 07, 08, then I bought this house in October of 08, and did the responsible thing of putting 20% down. I can hear Solly saying, sucker, right now. Boom, back to $0 and 0 cents in the bank account and starting all over again. Enter the Fox Sports Morning Show in 08, 09, where I found you guys, and it accompanied me while I worked my ass off rebuilding my bank account. Damn, I love those stories. And I know that he's not the only one. I know that many of you have stories like this. And those are the kind of stories that I appreciate that. I am not in that situation. I am, some would say, entering the 2-minute warning of my media career. Maybe not that, maybe fourth quarter. I don't know. I'm 57. I'm still pretty vibrant. I got a lot of yakking left in me. Hell, I've gone for 1 hour and 5 minutes so far. You guys said that now that I've got the time, you want longer Zabecasts. You're going to get them. You're going to get them. But anyway, I love these stories, and it does give me oomph and zeal. Not that there isn't things already happening, oh, by the way, which I'm very hands together thankful for. But it also brought me to something that I don't know if you have heard. If not, it'll be new to you. If you've heard of it, then you'll say, oh yeah, I've heard that. That's a good one. It's a Chinese parable called The Old Man and the Horse. Ah, music. It's a Taoist story from the ancient text called the Huanzani from the 2nd century BC. And it illustrates the idea that events perceived as good or bad are not absolute, as their consequences can unfold unpredictably. It goes something like this. An old man, Cy Wang, lived in a small farming village near the border. His horse, a very valuable asset, ran away one day. His neighbors pitied him, telling him, "Oh, I'm so sorry for your great misfortune." The old man just calmly replied and said, "Maybe it's a bad thing. Maybe it's a good thing. Too soon to tell." His neighbors were stunned. What do you mean? Well, days later, the horse returned bringing a herd of wild horses with it. The neighbors quickly congratulated him with amazement and relief upon his newfound wealth. Yet again, the old man responded, "Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing. Too soon to tell." The next month, the old man's son was trying to tame one of the wild horses and broke his leg while riding in a terrible fall. The neighbors once again expressed sympathy, seeing it as an incredible tragedy. The old man repeated, "Maybe it's a bad thing. Maybe it's a good thing. Too soon to tell." Shortly after, the Chinese army came village to village in the province, conscripting young men, young able men, to enlist in a dangerous war. Yet the son was spared because of his broken leg. The neighbors marveled at this stroke of good luck. And by now you know what the old man said once more. "Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing. Too soon to tell." It's a parable that teaches that life's events are neither inherently good nor bad, that outcomes are uncertain, and what seems like a blessing or a curse can lead sometimes to the exact opposite. It encourages humility, detachment, and acceptance of life's unpredictability, thus aligning with the Taoist principles of going with the flow of the Tao. The story is often as used as well to promote perspective and resilience, reminding us to not rush to judgment about life's ups and downs. Well, there was a shocker to me that it happened this quick in Milwaukee with the station that I had spent the last 6 years thinking about nonstop. How can I make this thing the biggest success ever? How can we kick the most ass ever? How can we have the most fun ever? 97.3 The Game. You know that my show was not renewed. I was essentially fired with Brian Butch last Tuesday. Well, I had speculated, according to the rumors out there in the trades, they might be changing formats. Who knows when that could be, but I figured they'd run it through the end of the football season and run it through the end of the baseball playoffs. But guess what? At noon today, Monday, flip, they flipped the switch. This story from WISN in Milwaukee. iHeartMedia Milwaukee announced major changes to its stations, including ending Sports Radio 97.3 FM, The Game. The company says the Green Bay Packers and Wisconsin Badger football broadcasts previously heard on the station will move to 95.7 or Big FM, another one of the company's FM stations. iHeart says the new station will be known as B97.3 or B97, a new adult contemporary branded as feel-good favorites, effective immediately. The station will focus on songs from artists like Adele, Michael Jackson, Pink, Maroon 5, and Madonna. The station will also add a full lineup of personalities. Last week, iHeart announced that morning show hosts Steve Zabin, Brian Butch would no longer be part of The Game. Afternoon host and Big 12 WISN contributor Drew Olson announced that his show is still on in Madison and it's still on in the iHeart app. And they have a website, drewandkb.com. I don't know what's going on there. I haven't talked to too many people about what the situation is. I believe they're going to keep doing their shows for at least the next couple of months as perhaps some contractual arrangements run their course. I don't know. But boom, just like that, ICBM nuclear strike wipes out the whole station. I mean, out of the blue. There's nobody there that saw this coming. And I don't understand it. Nobody understands it. Company decision at levels well above us. It's a bad thing right now. Maybe, though, maybe it's a good thing. Too soon to tell. Oh, by the way, what was the first song played on the new B97 Feel Good Radio here in Milwaukee? I kid you not on this. Either this is a case of, hey, this is the best we've got, best foot forward for the new format. This got to come out strong with our best banger. Or I don't know, somebody was spiking the football in someone's face because the first song was Happy by Pharrell. Jesus. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. You cannot be serious. An entire sports station that was the number one rated sports station according to the Nielsen ratings in the market that had at least a dozen plus people employed vaporized out of the blue to flip to music. And they played this song first. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Somebody sent me a Family Guy clip of Peter Griffin crying inside the garage in his station wagon. And then he hears this song comes on. He can't help but just start moving with the music. Oh, God. Life is unpredictable. And you got to just lean into it. You got to have humility. You got to have detachment. And you got to have acceptance of this stuff. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing. Too soon to tell. It was a fun-ass thing, and I really enjoyed all of it, and my heart does hurt for everyone still that were there hoping that, okay, so we got rid of Zabin and Butch. We can still have a station, right? Come on, guys. Apparently, according to the corporate overlords, the answer is no. No more station. That sucks. Okay, I'm done. Hour and 14 of just me. Stretching my legs out. For all of you who listen to this podcast on 1.5x speed or 2x speed, which is apparently a thing, many of you do it. I don't begrudge you from doing it. Your time is valuable and busy. Although I, as a broadcaster, believe that pace and pausing is very crucial to the overall theatrics of spoken word format. It's not what I would do, but for those of you who are going 1x, 1.5x, 2x, well, it was only 45 minutes or 30 minutes or something like that. Thanks for listening. As always, tell a friend if they're like, what happened to Zabin? I'm here every day, Monday through Friday. Well, Monday through Thursday, you got to subscribe to Fridays, but I trust that you will. It's a mere $5 a month, and I know you'll enjoy it. But tell a friend, rate and review. It helps the algorithms, and just spread the word. Thanks for listening. Have a great Tuesday, and we will see you next time. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you know.
You know football and you pick winners all the time. So why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won. Make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit mybookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season exclusively at MyBookie.